Hello, everybody. Today from Salzburg in Austria. I am Angela Schottenhammer from the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium, and I'm the supervisor of a research project entitled Seafaring, Trade and Knowledge Transfer, Maritime Politics and Commerce in Early Middle Period to Early Modern China, which has generously been sponsored by the Gerda Henkel Foundation. We are a small group of researchers and have been investigating since 2014 various aspects of Chinese maritime politics and trade commerce, including, for example, also aspects such as piracy. One important focus, of course, are also the famous Zhanghe expeditions that took place in the early 15th century. Zhanghe was a Chinese eunuch that has been sent on in total 7 expeditions to Southeast Asia and the Indian Ocean world on the order of the Chinese Ming Emperor Yongle. These expeditions have become a kind of a very hot topic in recent decades, not only because Chinese politicians sometimes claim that they have been very, very peaceful and were in fact only proof of peaceful diplomatic relations between China and other countries, but a crucial thing is also that we ask ourselves, did Zhanghe actually go to all these places that are recorded in the Chinese sources? Did his ships carry him as far as the east coast of Africa or to the Arab world, into the Red Sea or to other places? So as it is the case with the travels of, for example, Marco Polo, Ibn Battuta or others, there also exist some doubts if Zhanghe really went to all these places. So today I'm very happy that I can welcome one of our team members here in Salzburg, Alexander Joost from Salzburg University, who has investigated a certain aspect of the Zhanghe expeditions, namely his voyages to the Arab world. Welcome, Alexander.
Hello.
Alexander is trained in both Chinese and Islamic studies, and he has looked into the Arab and Persian sources to see if there are some records about the Zhanghe expeditions. So, Alexander, what actually can you tell us about these sources? Do they really mention that Zhanghe went to the Arab world? Because frequently we ask ourselves, while there are Chinese sources telling us stories about the expeditions, almost nothing seems to exist from foreign sources.
At first, yes, I think we can for sure say that Zhanghe has reached as far as the Arabic world. Of course, how precise and how true each and every single record among the Chinese sources which are left to us is, that is another question. All in all, we do have Persian and Arabic sources mentioning the visits of the Zhanghe fleet in Hormuz, in Aden, and in Jeddah, or respectively Mecca. For Aden, we have actually mentions of 3 separate visits. For Hormuz, we have a mention of one visit, although we know that it should have been more than this one. And for other visits around the Arabian Peninsula, like for example the frankincense ports of Lhasa or Zufar, we have no local sources, or at least so far, we haven't discovered any.
What actually do these sources tell us exactly? So how can we be sure that these sources, the Arab and Persian sources, really refer to Zhanghe, that it's him, that it's his fleet and not something else? What do they tell us? Because I'm pretty sure they won't mention the name of Zhanghe or so. This we won't find in these sources. How can we be sure?
Yeah, well, that's true. They do not mention the name of Zhanghe. But I think they do mention enough to make us quite sure that his expeditions is what they are talking about. One thing is that definitely these Arabic and Persian sources are in no way as detailed as the Chinese sources we have. That is no further strange, because the Zhanghe expeditions were Chinese expeditions. He went as a representative of the Ming Emperor. He carried out his missions to pursue Chinese interests, and after all, most of those peoples which came with him were Chinese. So of course, what we are looking at when we see these Arabic sources is fragmentary evidence. They are mentioned in chronicles which were composed at contemporary times, or also several years later, and in which this event of the arrival of a Chinese fleet is one of many things they would be speaking about. I want to illustrate this a little bit at the example of Aden, the arrival of the Zhanghe fleet in Aden, which I think illustrates this quite nicely. Let's first begin with the mention of the ships. The Arabic source speaks here about tremendously large ships, very impressive ships. In Arabic, they speak about a marakib al-azima, which is really a quite strong expression. And when we see that at that time, those ships which usually would be seen in the western half of the Indian Ocean would be Indian or Arabic dhows, which are very, very useful, very fast, and also technically very developed ships, but size was really never what they would be all about. This is already an indication that we have kind of special ships here. Another source mentions these ships also very explicitly under the name Junk. Junk is our word for the Chinese junk. So it's a Chinese style ship. It's not the common word which would usually be used for ships in Arabic sources. Furthermore, it is also mentioned, although no name is actually appearing here, but it's mentioned that the captain of those ships, or the leader of those group of ships, is the representative of the ruler of China. If at that time a representative of a ruler of China would arrive there, it cannot be imagined that he would not be part of Zhanghe's fleet. This comes to even more precision when we see that we are lucky to have the dates of the arrivals and departures of the fleet mentioned in several of those Arabic sources. They are not always absolutely identical, so there are certain doubts here, but generally speaking, they match with the dates of departure and arrival of the entire fleet in China, which we have recorded in the Mingxi and in the Mingxi Lu, which are in this case the most prominent Chinese sources. And at last, we also do have records about what actually happened when this Chinese representative arrived in Yemen, about the diplomatic exchange that took place.
This would have been my next question. Yeah, diplomatic exchange, because we know in these times this implied, for example, the exchange of gifts, also certain ceremonies. What actually do we know about such concrete contacts between the crew of the Zhanghe fleets and the local rulers?
Yeah, here it is as well, like this, that our most detailed record comes from Yemen. Yemen was at that time part of the ruling territory of the Rasulid dynasty, and the Rasulid Sultan, the Chinese envoy encountered was Al-Malik al-Nasir. And we have quite a detailed description about those commodities which either as gifts or as trade goods were brought by the Chinese to Yemen, and also of those goods which were brought from Yemen back to China or to other places the fleet would want to visit thereafter. And what is actually even more interesting than this is that we have a we don't only have a description, which, for example, includes that the Chinese envoy bestowed an a very prestigious document with gilded paper to the Sultan, and the Sultan also compiled another document together with the envoy, as we know this from from other examples. But we also do have an example where actually we can see how, at least in some cases, this tributary exchange may have been perceived by the other side. And this is quite interesting because we have an account of this visit in three different books. One is the Tarikh al-Yaman fi Dawlati Rasuliyya, so the history of Yemen under the Rasulid rule, which is kind of a very strict chronology of the later years of the Rasulid rule in Yemen. And we don't know who has compiled this. It's probably compiled by a group of people around the year 1440. And then we have two other books by the author Abdurrahman ibn al-Daiba, and who is writing roughly 20 years later, so still within a time range after these events, that we can assume that he has quite some real information. And he has his one of his works are the Qurat al-Uyun fi Akhbar al-Yaman al-Maimun, and the other one is the Kitab Bughiyat al-Mustafid fi Akhbar Madinat Zabit, so kind of a his own regional history of the city of Zabit, written on his own account. And in one of his books he just mentions a description of this diplomatic encounter in which the Sultan admits to the Chinese envoy that he accepts the overlordship and the superiority of the Chinese emperor over all the countries. And he says, this land is yours and the authority is yours. He speaks some words like this and gives him a lot of gifts, and the envoy sails away again. But in the other book, we have the exact same text. Just the last passage is different, in which he also says that he gives gifts to him and lets him sail away. And thereafter, he says something like, this is a very bad behavior that the Chinese are having here. It's crazy that they think they are coming from afar and can speak like this to the rulers of all the countries. So if you want to act well behaved, you don't do like this. But after all, although this may by some have been perceived like this, they decided to play along because the temptations of the commodity exchange, of the flourishing trade with the Chinese, were just greater than certain doubts about the appropriateness of their diplomatic behavior.
Okay, this last paragraph that you have just quoted, this touches upon an important aspect of the Zhang He expeditions, namely, the goal, the purpose of these expeditions, to request at least a formal submission of the foreign rulers under Chinese superiority. This is quite interesting that this is mentioned. Also interesting is, of course, the other aspect that you just addressed, the aspect of trade and commerce, because this shows, I think, that these expeditions did not only have a political, military purpose, but also a commercial one. So what can you tell us? What do these sources tell us more about your products, commodities that were exchanged, or perhaps in what kind of commodities were the Chinese interested in?
Yeah, we have also a rather detailed account on this in the Arabic sources. For example, again, for the visit in Yemen, we have a listing in the Tarikh al-Yaman, in this official chronicle, which quite extend the list of commodities which we already have from the account of Fei Xin, a Chinese traveler who went along with the Zhenghe fleet. What we can say in particular is that beside, of course, of the precious spices or incenses, and also, of course, clothes, porcelain, sometimes also metal, precious metals, which came from China. Yet some more emphasis is made on the precious textiles. They obviously took very much notice of the beautiful silks and brocades, which came from China. And there is another quite interesting case is that the Arabs were very interested in the musk, which the Chinese brought along. We don't know if they actually brought this from China, or they may also have easily picked it up somewhere around Bengal or anywhere else in India. But they were very keen on this, and therefore on the first visit of the Chinese fleet in Aden, they noticed that the Chinese brought musk. But on the second visit, they noted down that the Chinese did not only bring musk, they also brought a musk deer. So this animal which produces the musk, and that now is of course an interesting point, because you may ask why. If you want to on a long run bring this precious commodity to Yemen, and wouldn't it be better you keep it precious by concealing the origin of this commodity, instead of giving these people in Yemen, after all, the chance to produce the musk themselves? I think this is a quite interesting place, because it actually shows that other than this would, for example, have been the case with the later European trading companies, it was in this particular case probably still the higher priority for the Chinese side to make the Yemeni side really happy than to just create a positive atmosphere by fulfilling them this kind of wish, than to just make sure that you can hold grasp of this monopoly in musk that you probably had at this time. It's very interesting. Another thing that is also can be considered here is that musk is a material where purity is very important, and when you just receive the musk as a trade good, you can never really make sure about the purity. But if you produce it yourself, of course, then you can. So that may also have played a role. That would be the situation for the things that were brought from China to Yemen. And it's become even more interesting when it comes to the commodities which the Chinese took away from Yemen. Those were actually already quite some of them were recorded by the Chinese side, but also this was supplemented by information from the Arabic sources, especially in terms of animals. For example, we have more precise information there was what kind of gazelle or what kind of lion or camels or these kinds of animals which were brought along, as we know, together with the famous giraffe by the Zhenghe fleet. And another thing is that also textiles were actually given to the Chinese by the Rasulite representatives, especially a set of clothes like the Sultan wore them, including a Sultan's belt, hat, this kind of things, which was not recorded by the Chinese in turn. Probably this was considered a big deal to the Rasulite side, to the Yemeni side, a kind of a respect towards the Chinese visitors, but the Chinese visitors didn't really consider it a point, because for them what mattered was this document of submission, not the insignia of a foreign power.
Yes, I think the example of the Moshu deer that you just mentioned, this is a particular case that can also show that generally speaking, if we look at the purpose of the Zhanghe expeditions and compare them with the European expansion that happened a little bit later, that it's really clear, and we must pay attention to that, that the Zhanghe expeditions had nothing to do with the kind of early modern mercantilism, with upcoming colonialism, and that the purpose was not really to take hold of a foreign country and its material resources and just in the end just make business, make money with it, but that a different aspect mattered for the Chinese. As you said, it was a kind of formal submission under Chinese superiority. This is also why this document mattered more than actually really trade, we could say. This brings me now to a perhaps last question, because I think on colonialism and the disparities and similarities between Europeans and Chinese, this would require another podcast. But a last question pertains to the fact that Zhanghe himself, he was a Muslim, and that we also know that part of his fleet, that they also went into the Red Sea and went as far as Mecca. We have now, you have been talking a lot about Yemen, but what about Mecca?
Yeah, thank you, Angela. It's very good that you bring this up again. So far, I've only been talking about Yemen all the time. In fact, the case of Mecca is a very interesting one too. As we all know, Zhenghe was a Muslim. He was the offspring of what we nowadays think a Central Asian family who came to Yunnan with the Mongols about 200 years before his travels, and that was of course also one reason why he was particularly suitable to take up this duty to be an envoy to the Indian Ocean, which was largely dominated by Muslim peoples and by Muslim culture. And the first slight disappointment is maybe that according to all the sources we have, Arabic just as Chinese, Zhenghe never made it to Mecca, but it was a very small part, a very small group of his people which actually decided to do this extra part of the journey, separating from the rest of the group in the Indian harbor of Calicut. And this group was led by another grand eunuch named Hong Bao. And we were pretty sure that Ma Huan, whose travel account we are very often relying on, especially when it's about the experiences of the fleet in the Western Indian Ocean, should have also been part of this mission. From the later reception of Zheng He's travels, we always kind of know Mecca as the farthest place that Zheng He has been to, that his fleet has been to, together with the east coast of Africa. But what is particular about Mecca is while all these other places, or at least all these other regions, were visited at least twice, if not three times, during all the seven journeys, Mecca was only on his schedule during the last journey. And this is one more aspect where the Arabic sources, in this case, of course, not Yemeni sources anymore, provide us with extra evidence, which may explain why this was so. From the Kitab as-Suluk of al-Makrisi, who is a Mamluk historian who was writing about Egypt, but based at this time in Syria, we know the exact dates when not only of arrival and departure of the Chinese fleet in the Hejaz region, but also even that that a letter was sent ahead of them to the Sharif of Mecca and to the ruler of Jeddah, in which they already announced their arrival. So we can know quite for sure, not exactly on the day, but we can know quite for sure what was the time of the year when this group arrived at this holy site of Islam. And that is exactly the place which may explain to us why on the seventh journey and not on the other journeys, because on the seventh journey the timing of the expedition fit exactly with the pilgrimage month in Mecca, with the month of Dhul-Hijjah, when over several days the pilgrimage rites were to be executed, but also the time when Mecca actually had become a gathering place of thousands of Muslims from different parts of the Islamic world, which would surely be a very interesting situation for this group of Chinese envoys to make contacts, probably also to conduct trade. Much different from the rest of the year, when except a group of smaller groups of Umrah pilgrims, the city would rather be quiet and in no way comparable to an important harbor city like, for example, Aden. Although Zheng He himself has never been to Mecca and he hasn't done the Hajj, and although his accounts actually don't speak about the phenomenon of the Hajj by itself, we can assume that the visit of the Chinese mission to Mecca from the time exactly coincided with the Hajj month.
Yeah, thank you very much for all this information. I think the examples you have introduced now, they really can show us that we should not have too many doubts anymore that Zheng He and his fleet, that they really went to these places. And the sources you introduced can also show us that we can see these voyages from a slightly different, from the Arab perspective. We know up to date no shipwrecks have been found, so I think it's quite important to complement our Chinese records with these kinds of Arab sources. Again, thank you very much. This was Alexander Joost from Salzburg University. He is a team member also in our project Seafaring Trade and Knowledge Transfer, Maritime Politics and Commerce from Early Middle Period to Early Modern China. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Goodbye.